Hurricane Irma may be gone, but the damage lingers, and not just to physical objects. Good Tuesday morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, make sure to download our podcast through iTunes or the WJCT app. Just ahead, how to deal with the psychological trauma that's brought from the stress of storms like Hurricane Irma. How are you doing out there? We've got a licensed counselor in studio right now to take your calls. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, a look ahead to Jacksonville's See the Girl Summit. Our movable feast on this show heads up to the Golden Isles today. Plus, later in the hour, Jacksonville filmmaker Warren Skeels. He's the creator of MTV's new hit series, Siesta Key. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, Hurricane Irma is gone, but the damage lingers, and not just to buildings or businesses. This unprecedented, large, and powerful natural disaster affected the entire state of Florida and beyond, and it prompted the largest ever mass evacuation from the state. The psychological impacts of Irma will be felt for some time to come and by many, many thousands of people. Including all of us here at WJCT, we've been through a lot of stress, just like everybody else. That's why I'm so pleased to welcome Melody Bean Eckhart. She's a therapist and executive administration coordinator with Florida Counseling and Evaluation Services, and she's here in studio. Melody, good to see you.
Good to see you. Thank you for the invitation, Melissa.
And to everyone listening out there, how are you doing after Irma? Are you stressed? Has it been difficult? You need to be good to yourself right now, and we've got some help right here. Give us a call. Let us know what you're struggling with. It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online and send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. We're already getting your tweets. And check us out on Facebook. We're already getting your comments there, too. And so, Melody, we've all been affected by Irma in one way or another, either physically, mentally, financially, emotionally. Nobody was left untouched by this storm. So in this sense, it's this collective experience of trauma.
Absolutely. As much as we were individually impacted, it is a collective event. And it goes beyond Jacksonville, even, for the fact that people have relatives in other parts of Florida and other parts of the Southeast, that this impact will last for quite a while.
And, you know, storms are nothing new for Florida, but this one in particular, I think, has just laid so many of us out because there was this anticipation that built for days and days. And so this adrenaline rush, I think, that we all experienced, followed by the fear of being in the storm and then the letdown afterwards. Our body has these fight or flight responses that are very well developed to respond to threats. How does a storm like Irma create haywire with our psyche and our bodies in this way?
Well, just what you've expressed is so true. I mean, the physical, mental, and emotional impact of there was all this heavy activity of getting ready for the storm, preparing for the storm, not knowing what the outcome would be. I think we're all now averse to the phrase hunkering down because we hunkered down for so long. But what happens is after a while, our bodies can only take so much of that intense stress, that adrenaline rush. And where normally that would dissipate after a while, because we're dealing with so much storm cleanup, because we're seeing so many scenes of what's going on in the world and in our state with this, because another storm is in the Atlantic. So we don't have a chance to fully recover.
And by the way, Senator Marco Rubio is in downtown Jacksonville today, along with the state's chief financial officer, talking to folks who've been affected by Hurricane Irma. How are you doing out there? And how are you recovering psychologically from the storm? Give us a call. Let us hear your thoughts and concerns right now at 549-2937. So the trauma response is like any other type of trauma or shock that you go through. This goes for people that maybe lost everything in the storm, lost homes, lost possessions, or even those that didn't.
Absolutely. And one of the things I caution people about is to avoid comparisons at a time like this. You know, there's a survivor's guilt of sense for people who didn't lose anything or who weren't maybe physically impacted. And yet, in one way or another, everybody was. We don't know everybody's backstories. We don't know what they were dealing with prior to the storm. Then Irma came along and added another level of concern and another level of stress in our lives. So absolutely, we've had a piling on here.
And what are you seeing in your patient population? Things like depression, anxiety, trouble sleeping, fatigue, all those things.
All of those things. Appetite disturbances, feeling fatigued, people report feeling like a zombie. They feel numb. They're having difficulty as much as they want to return to normalcy. That's difficult because nothing feels normal right now. And we have to be kind to ourselves and to others and not push it.
So you have some coping tips that I think we all can take advantage of.
Absolutely. There are a number of things we can do. And I think the important thing here, Melissa, too, is that this is good not just for dealing with the storm, but with any type of stress, and in this case, the cumulative stress that we've all experienced. When we talk about building resilience, we want to look at what are some of those key components. And I think that a big piece of that is we have to be mindful and live in the present. We can only take a day at a time. We can't do anything about what's happened. We can't all turn to the right and blow the storm away. But we can deal with each day as it comes. I think the other thing is, for some people, the magnitude of what they're having to deal with right now with storm cleanup, or they've been displaced from their home, we really need to look at what can we control, what can we do, and keep it broken up into some small manageable pieces.
Take things in small steps. Get good sleep and nutrition. Limit media exposure. Obviously, we're putting information out via the media right now, but... You're encouraging people to decompress a little,
right?
Because of course everybody was glued to the news if they could get it during the storm.
Right, absolutely. And we want people to be alert and aware. That's important. We want people to receive information. For some people, processing that information becomes information overload. It's a little bit like a car wreck. You don't want to look, but you can't help yourself from looking. And so for people who are finding themselves having difficulty with concentration, poor sleep, they're irritable, they're stressed, we don't want them to turn away from media completely, but maybe to limit that exposure. I think the other thing that's important too is as much as possible for people to get into a routine.
Routine is important.
Very important.
Even if you're out of your house,
yes.
Which some people are.
Yes.
How do you do that if your home was destroyed?
Exactly. So then in that case, it's about developing a new routine, setting up some sort of new normal. I think we all have that desire to go back to the way things were. And as you point out, for some people, that's completely impossible. The other thing is, it's really important for children and elderly to have a routine. And so as best we can, to get back to walking a pet or taking our child to school, whatever it is that gives that sense of security.
Children really need that right now.
Yeah.
More than ever.
They do. And we need to encourage some creative expression with that as well. Encourage them to talk about it. Encourage them to get involved in the dialogue.
Okay. And if you're just tuning in, as we speak with Melody Bean Eckhart, a therapist with Florida Counseling and Evaluation Services, be aware that even if you didn't suffer storm damage from Irma, trauma, psychological impacts can linger. And there is such good information Melody's giving all of us right now, such good therapy. It's 549-2937. Give us a call. Heather is down in Green Cove Springs. Hi, Heather. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad to hear you guys talking about this because I was thinking I was a little bit crazy. I haven't been sleeping at night. My house had just a little bit of damage, nothing that can be fixed and nothing that is going to last a long time, but I have friends whose complete house completely flooded, and I've been helping her dig through her stuff, and I've been working with some of her photographs, trying to clean them up, but I don't know, and we were without power until Saturday, so we were living in somebody else's house, and everything I felt like I was handling, but I've just not been sleeping. And I feel like when I go to sleep at night, I'm having these fitful sleeps of, like, just digging through watery junk. And it's like, and I wake up and I look and I'm sitting in a clean bed. And I go back to sleep and it starts all over again. And I wake up so tired. And it's been, you know, ongoing. And I was just wondering when it's going to end.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, thanks, Heather. Melody.
Heather, that's a great question. First, I'm grateful that you all are okay, and I'm very sorry to hear about what happened with your friend, and she's blessed to have you helping her. The individual recovery from something like this is as different as we are, and I wish I could say that there's a time limit for it or a specific prescription for it, but there's not. I think the very first thing is that, number one, you're already very aware of how this has affected you, and you're tuned into that. Sometimes how quickly we respond depends on what we were dealing with even before the storm. So now the storm's become something additional that we're now dealing with. And it also has to do with how well we're taking care of ourselves, how much of a support system we have, and if we're utilizing that support system. I would say definitely stay tuned into your sleep habits, you know, moods. There are some people saying they feel more irritable or they're having more difficulty concentrating. The sleep is a big issue. For those of us, none of us who slept during the storm, we say we could sleep 10 hours in a row now, but that's not happening. So the main thing is stay alert to your symptoms. And if you get to a point where you feel that, okay, enough is enough, then that might be time to see your primary care doctor, to reach out to friends, family, clergy, mental health professionals, and say, I need a little extra help getting through this. One thing I want everyone to hear is that asking for help in situations like this is not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength, and it's something that we need to do collectively to move forward.
Joanna is in St. Augustine. How are you doing, Joanna?
Good. How are you?
Okay, go ahead.
Yes, so I actually live in St. Augustine, and I have to say I'm very grateful that I did not sustain damage. But
good.
Leading up to the storm, I live in a 25-foot travel trailer that we have renovated into a tiny home. So we were very concerned that our house would actually just blow away. So the stress leading up to the storm was just something I had never experienced before, to the point where I was having a panic attack in my backyard leading up to the storm. So my husband actually instilled a rule in our family now that we do not listen to the news about the storms until it's 3 days out, because we have our plan, we have our bags packed and ready to go. So rather than try and feed into the frenzy of the week leading up to it, we're only giving ourselves 3 days to kind of focus on it to help all of our mental health. And I would recommend the same for everybody else, because it's worked for us.
Oh, yeah, for sure, Joanna. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely, Joanna. And again, I'm very grateful to hear that you're okay. That anticipatory anxiety that you're describing, you know, our bodies are formed for this fight or flight response. We're either going to hunker down and fight, or we're going to get the heck out of Dodge. And that requires a great adrenaline rush. And when that adrenaline is coursing through our veins for a long period of time, it's very fatiguing.
It really is. I know all of my co-workers here at the station, we worked all through the storm here and were going on pure adrenaline for several days. And then the crash you feel in the aftermath can be pretty intense.
Absolutely. You know, I think most people step up during a crisis and they're able to get through the crisis, but it's that letdown afterwards, and it's that, your word is perfect, that crash of, all right, now what? And, you know, this is where self-care becomes really, really important.
Melody Eckhart, taking your calls, how are you struggling with just the impacts of Irma after the storm? Marie is in Riverside. Hello, Marie. Go ahead. Go ahead, Marie.
Hi, this is Marie. I'm a restoration worker, and I just wanted to make the point that when you're out there driving in your trucks and your cars, you've got to remember that there's a lot of people here from out of town. There's a lot of people that are following their GPS. They don't know if they're going to turn left or right up ahead. So you've got to make an allowance for the craziness on the road. It's not a good time to get on a bicycle and go sightseeing. It's not a good time to push a baby stroller out in front of you and cross the street. Pick up the baby. Hold on to the baby. I see this all the time. There are many, many people here that are frantic in their cars, driving through the areas that we know that where you should slow down, but they don't. And you know what those areas are, because they're on the news every morning. So I just urge everybody to pay a lot of attention driving. There are so many people here that don't know our area. They're following directions. They're responding to losses and water losses and trees on houses and fires. So you cannot walk out there or get on a bike and assume that everything is normal, because on the road, it is not normal.
Yes.
And the other thing I'll just point out in agreement with your guest is that when I visit a home, too, I tell the people that this is one of those times where you can't be a strong woman and do it all. You have to ask for help. And if someone, whether it's a church, a neighbor, anybody asks you, do you need help? You say yes. This is one of those times. You have to say yes.
Absolutely, Marie. Thank you.
That is so key, Marie. And I think you bring up a couple of good points. One is that we need to, again, be as mindful as we can be and be tuned in, because right now we have a tendency, some of us, to be distracted. There's just so much going on. I think the other thing is like you said, asking for help, understanding it's not a sign of weakness. And when we can, too, for those who didn't suffer damage or for those who have the means to do so, extending help to other people, that can actually be part of the recovery process.
Right. Get out and volunteer if you feel able, or whatever you think you can do to help. I'm going to do a little bit of that in a minute. First, though, some emails and tweets coming in. Emily emails the show. I've lived in St. Augustine for 8 years and haven't worried much about this. But now, after 2 years in a row, Matthew and now Irma, I feel vulnerable. The future seems much more uncertain. I'm worried about the future and what it could hold, and it's hard for me to focus on what needs to be done now. I think so many Floridians are worried about just the viability of this state in future years, as we can expect stronger and more intense storms. Here's a tweet. Personally, I'm near exhausted. Grocery store workers everywhere are working twice as hard to keep the shelves barely full. Lane tweets the show, lots of music and essential oils, plus focusing my mind elsewhere between major newscasts. And a few comments on our Facebook page here. Sean, I'm having to replace my roof and dealing with all the stress from homework, and the storm has me tightly wound. I'm so stressed I want to cry, so tired, but I've got to stay strong for my family. Hope writes, this has been so difficult, but especially places like the Washington Heights area. People working there have lost everything, and there's a concern about them being overwhelmed. They have been virtually forgotten. That's one neighborhood, yes, thanks for pointing that out, that's been hit hard. And I have a friend who I went through a leadership class with, and you know, he sent out an email the other day. This is a guy who, you know, seems to have it all. He's a husband. He's a father. He owns his own law firm. He lives in a beautiful waterfront home, all that kind of stuff, right? Well, like everybody else, this hurricane is a great leveler. Like everybody else, Charlie Jimerson is having a rough time right now. So I'm going to just read a little bit of this to you. He awoke, he says, his family on Monday morning to a river running through our house. I took the kids and the dogs on my back in chest-high water and tropical depression winds out of the home. I used my canoe to rescue several families in our neighborhood and then canoed my family to higher ground. Our house was flooded to our knees throughout and is likely a total loss. It appears my car is lost also. Jimerson and Cobb has been working remotely for the week as our building, their office in the Wells Fargo building, sustained catastrophic damage to its essential systems due to flooding. We're told it will be 3 months or more before our office can reopen. This storm has turned our world upside down. And so here's a guy who's out of his house and he's out of his business. His business has been destroyed and his home, a double whammy. So, you know, I just want to make a quick call out. If you're a real estate agent, give Jimerson and Cobb a call. Help them find temporary housing for the for his family and temporary office space for the law firm. Just wanted to see if we could get that out there. And so That email stuck out to me, Melody, because some people have been doubly impacted.
Absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned the fact that we had Matthew also less than a year ago. There were people impacted by that hurricane. I had some friends who were just getting back into their home.
Yes.
In St. Augustine, only to be re-traumatized by this. So definitely storm weary. Definitely.
Rob is in downtown Jacksonville. Go ahead, Rob.
Hi, how you doing, Elizabeth?
Doing all right. How about you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing good, thanks. First things first, I wanted to give a big shout-out to JEA and to all of the people that came in from out of state and out of town to help us get the lights back on. They did a fantastic job, especially considering the circumstances. And I also wanted to let your listeners know that next month, the Union Art Studios downtown is going to be having a big hurricane relief auction where we're going to be offering a lot of original artwork and donating the proceeds to various hurricane relief organizations such as the Red Cross and Salvation Army and several other organizations. There's a lot of people all over the country right now are needing.
And how can people get in touch on that, Rob?
If you look up the Union Art Studios on Facebook, we're having a final meeting to discuss details this week. So we should have it completely ready for marketing by the beginning of next week. Have all the details up on that.
All right. Fantastic. Thanks, Rob. People are trying to help in any way they can. Your final thoughts, Melody?
I think the most important things right now is that we can't change what's happened. We need to concentrate our energies on moving forward, and we need to pace ourselves on doing that. Rob brought up a good point about being grateful and thankful for the efforts of so many people that are helping to try to restore some sense of normalcy. I would advise that people be kind, people be patient. We've been tested. We've all been tried, and nobody's been left unscathed. Be sure you've got a good support system. That's extremely critical in times like this. And as we mentioned before, use that support system. Let people know how you're doing. And also check in on people. Some folks may not be so quick to reach out, so maybe you can be the one that extends that hand or text or phone call and see how someone else is doing.
Good advice. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much, Melissa.
Melody Bean Eckhart is a counselor and administrator with Florida Counseling and Evaluation Services. Much more still ahead later. Find out how a local filmmaker is the creator behind MTV's new hit series, Siesta Key. But up next, Jacksonville's See the Girls Summit. We'll be right back.
The new book, One Nation After Trump, starts with this sentence. American democracy was never supposed to give the nation a president like Donald Trump. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with the authors E.J. Dionne and Norm Ornstein. They believe that this subsequent period of national soul-searching could lead to an era of democratic renewal. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Into the debate about gender roles in this economy, let us add auto mechanic.
You know, we go out of our way to get our nails done. We will not go out of our way to get an oil change.
I'm Kai Rizdal. A nail salon in your repair shop will have that story, the rest of the day's business news, and the numbers from Wall Street as well, of course, next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Convinced you've heard it all before? Well, at Indie Endeavor, we challenge that notion. Tune into WJCT's After Hours for the best songs you've never listened to. Tuesdays at 11 p.m.
Welcome back. Well, it's an ambitious goal, nothing less than fundamentally changing the way we see girls in our society, especially girls caught up in the criminal justice system. This year's upcoming See the Girl Summit here in Jacksonville is a call to action. We've got a preview now as we welcome Dr. LaWanda Rivora and Taylor McDonald with the Dolores Barr Weaver Policy Center. They're putting on the summit. Ladies, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And joining us by phone, two of the featured speakers, Rebecca Epstein, Executive Director of the Georgetown Law Center on Poverty and Inequality. Hello, Rebecca.
Hi there.
Also on the phone, Nicole Mason, author and executive director of the Center for Research and Policy in the Public Interest at the New York Women's Foundation. Nicole, thanks for being here.
Hi, I'm happy to be here.
Some really stout speakers you've got lined up. LaWanda Rivora, let's start with you. Tell us about this year's See the Girl Summit.
Well, we are quite excited about our speakers, Melissa. And this year, the See the Girl Summit, our fourth annual, will be held October 19th and 20th at the Jesse Ball DuPont Center in downtown Jacksonville.
And Taylor McDonald, this is a way for people to learn more about the work of the Policy Center, but it's also more than that, isn't it?
It is. At the Policy Center, our vision is to have communities where every girl is valued, is listened to, and has an opportunity for a prosperous future. And so at this year's summit, our theme is Listen to My Story, It Will Change You. And when we listen to girls, we are able to shift the systems that disproportionately punish them or treat them unfairly.
Rebecca Epstein, you're certainly an expert on this. You're the executive director of the Georgetown Law Center on Poverty and Inequality. And in particular, you focus on race and sex discrimination in terms of policies and how girls in the system are marginalized. Can you tell us a little bit about your work and what you'll be talking about?
Sure. One of the things that we're going to be focusing on is the lack of services that so many girls face when they enter the juvenile justice system. Girls are the fastest growing segment of the population in the juvenile justice system, yet so often their needs are unidentified and unaddressed, in particular in terms of their physical and mental health. So the Center on Poverty and Inequality recently wrote a report on innovative interventions that could especially benefit girls while they're in the juvenile justice system, in particular ones that are based on their physical being. Oftentimes, girls who experience trauma remain disconnected from themselves, from their bodies. And so as a complement to talk therapy, if we use yoga and mindfulness practices, for example, we can reach them in different ways. And we have seen in studies that girls do benefit from this kind of intervention.
Now, Nicole Mason, you'll be speaking as well and talking about your own experience and your own path out of poverty. Tell us about your book, Born Bright, and some of the interventions that you're working to make when it comes to how girls and young women are treated, particularly girls from lower income families.
So Born Bright is my attempt to broaden the narrative about low income families, young women and girls of color in the country. Many times the stories and narratives about young women and girls of color are told from the perspective of the provider or policymakers and not the girls themselves. And so what I wanted to do with Born Bright was to share my story and also what I believe to be the stories of many girls like mine out, across the country. And what I'm hoping to do, or what the book hopes to do, so there's the memoir piece of it, but in the at the end there's really strong concrete policy interventions or suggestions that can be implemented at both the community and local and national levels. And in terms of thinking about what, you know, one of the main recommendations, so we talk about making sure that girls have, are mentally and physically, they have what they need, as Rebecca said, but also thinking about their communities and what those look like as well.
Okay, so one of the, well, the main focus of the Dolores Barr Weaver Policy Center is changing policies in this state. What would be some examples, LaWanda Rivora, that you are working on that people will learn about at this summit of policy changes?
One of the policy changes that we're looking at right now is the use of Backpage and the issues around the sexual exploitation and sex trafficking of girls and young women.
And Backpage is a publication that publishes ads that are trafficking girls.
Absolutely.
That's a that's a national publication.
That's a, well, it's...
It's out of New York, right?
Right. Yeah. And so we have partnered with people, obviously the Children's Campaign in Tallahassee, as well as our partners in Washington, D.C., around stopping that practice of where we are literally advertising children for sale through Backpage.
And girls are trafficked, they're prostituted, and then they're punished for being victimized in this way when they get caught up in the system.
We still have much work to be done so that we are
They're incarcerated.
Right, so that we are not punishing and victimizing young girls who are being exploited by traffickers. And many times what happens is they will get picked up for a crime that's committed, shoplifting, loitering, those kind of things that is really associated with being trafficked. And we don't stop to really listen to her story and to really understand what has happened to her. And we respond, she gets caught up in the justice system.
That's why this event is called See the Girl. Taylor McDonald, when you talk about a girl-centered practice or curriculum, mm-hmm. you're trying to, it sounds to me, to shift the conversation and also the infrastructure away from, honestly, a male point of view and trying to see things through the girl's point of view. And that's not easy to do.
That's right, Melissa. Thank you for acknowledging that, too. To be girl-centered means that we acknowledge girls as the experts of their own lives and their own experiences. We take the position that they are our teachers, that we don't know what's best for them, but they do. And so we aim to sit where they sit and to see what they see and to listen deeply to their narratives and how their lived experiences have shaped their experiences.
So this is coming up in October? October 19th and 20th?
October 19th and 20th. Today is the last day for early bird registration. Please visit our website, www.seethegirl.org, for more information.
Mark your calendar for that summit, and thanks for being with us. LaWanda Rivora, Taylor McDonald, both with the Dolores Barweaver Policy Center. On the line, Rebecca Epstein, she heads up Georgetown Law Center on Poverty and Inequality, and Nicole Mason, heading up research and policy at the New York Women's Foundation. All four of you, thank you so much for joining us with this. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Later in the hour, how a local filmmaker is scoring a national hit with MTV's new reality show, Siesta Key. But up next, it's our movable feast as we take a drive up to Georgia's Golden Isles. We'll be right back.
St. Louis has seen days of protests after a white police officer was acquitted of first-degree murder for killing a black suspect. The officer claimed self-defense. Prosecutors accused him of planting a gun at the scene. It's been 3 years since Ferguson caught the nation's attention on race and law enforcement. Has anything changed? Next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community. Your world.
On the eve of elections in Germany, the far right is flexing its muscles, pointing to refugees as a threat to the nation.
Islam does not belong to Germany, and it doesn't go together with our values.
And stirring memories of World War II.
We have not seen this type of discourse really since the Nazi Reich.
The politics of hate in Germany on the next Reveal.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Jazz Night in America, Eddie Palmieri and Harlem River Drive.
And my problem with Harlem River Drive is that I wanted a crossover. And you know who were my biggest fans? The anti-government movement, the Weathermen.
I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Support for Movable Feast is made possible by 927 Events, event venue and catering.
Welcome back. It's an iconic spot on Georgia's Golden Isles. In today's Movable Feast, our look at dining and hospitality trends around the area, Lee Court of the Women's Food Alliance talks with Bud St. Pierre of the King and Prince Resort on St. Simon's Island.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Give it to Gravy Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Try a tomato plate too.
I think it was about 15 years ago when you became the director of sales and marketing at the King and Prince.
It was. It's been a wonderful 15 years for me and my family to live on St. Simon's and to be part of the King and Prince story.
Well, that means you're the perfect person to tell us a little bit about the story. Actually, began in 1935.
You know, it's a historic hotel, and it on the island. It really has a wonderful place in history. It was the beach, you know, back in the day. It was the beach area for St. Simon's, and it still has a wonderful beach in front. Now, the old Coast Guard station. Actually, is the largest area where people public parking, but so many people come back to us and the stories that they tell of swimming in the pool and playing in the ocean and all the great things that the family memories that they've made here at the King and Prince are just wonderful to always hear.
Well, I think it's amazing that almost 90 years later, this beautiful sprawling oceanfront hotel is still carrying its tradition from the 1930s, but has really lived through almost a century of coastal southern hospitality. Mm-hmm. What does that mean to your guests?
Well, you know, I think the first thing is that it's a wonderful island. You know, St. Simon's has evolved, you know, with the changing times. You know, when all the way back, they haven't allowed overbuilding. They haven't, you know, in fact, there's not one high rise, you know, over four stories high.
On the entire island, all of St. Simon's.
There's not strip, you know, plazas and shopping all over the place. It's really, in fact, the resort is surrounded by private
homes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's the nice thing is that you go to a place like that, you just enjoy the beauty of the island.
Because we're on Movable Feast, let's talk about Echo.
Sure,
your
sure.
restaurant, your bar, your indoor dining, outdoor dining at the pool. It's all about Southern cuisine. Share a little bit about Echo.
Echo, I mentioned previously that we had a renovation years ago, and a large part of that was really to establish, enlarge the current footprint that we had for the restaurant. And it's really become the whole lobby area. The restaurant has its own room, but then there's this... Our large bar area and lounge area extends all the way to the outside. And in fact, it actually services the whole pool area. So in essence, we have, you know, 300 plus seats, you know, when you combine all the outdoor seating areas. What makes it unique is that it has so many different places that people can gather and just sit down and relax. Now, of course, tables, but then there's little banquettes. To the very comfortable bar area. Outdoor seating has many different options, you know, high tops
to the fire pit in the winter.
Yeah, to comfortable you know lounge seating in the pool area. So it's a lot of fun for friends to go and just talk about how many different places they never even knew existed, and yet they've been to the resort many times or been to Echo many times for meals. One of our vegetable providers actually is right in Brunswick. And it's amazing the things that they do for us and provide for us, and very fresh, and fresh that day, bring it to us.
Somehow the first thing I think about is okra. I love okra. Oh, yeah. It's so southern and so Georgia. It's so interesting. But definitely when I'm at the King and Prince, I have a yearning for shrimp.
Shrimp, yeah.
The Georgia white yeah. shrimp and blue crab. Mm. There's so many local specialties that come right out of the local water.
Right, right. Yeah, it's, you know, and if you don't know it, if you haven't tried it, there's something special about with Georgia white shrimp. And it's that unique flavor that it has. Of course, you know, we have a fresh catch of the day also. We do very well with working with, again, the local community on bringing in the freshest fish of the day.
What are some of the events that are coming up in the coming up season of the fall and the holiday season, which is magical, well, on St. Simon's at the hotel?
A big festival for us coming up is the St. Simon's Island, the Food and Spirits Festival. And that we're really looking forward to that this year. We've expanded our role and our sponsorship. It's just a wonderful celebration of all things food and spirits. It's the best way to say it.
Bud St. Pierre, the King and Prince Beach and Golf Resort, St. Simon's Island, thank you for joining me this morning.
It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Everybody eats when they come to my.
We'll be right back.
From PBS and Emmy Award-winning directors Ken Burns and Lynn Novick comes a landmark documentary event, The Vietnam War.
What was it all about? Was it worth it?
It was extremely traumatic, like the ground was suddenly cut from under you.
See the series Vanity Fair calls a monumental achievement, The Vietnam War.
Tonight at 8 on WJCT Public Television.
Writer and broadcaster Celeste Headlee says when it comes to conversations, we need to ignore one part of our bodies.
Stop trusting your gut. It is not telling you the truth.
It can be nerve-wracking to hear someone say, "We need to talk." In her new book, Headlee says we urgently need to dialogue from the heart, not the gut. Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
As Hurricane Irma moved across the first coast,
the road is covered in debris. I mean, we're coming apart out here.
WJCT and the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network, we're here for you.
It is 6:05 a.m. Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
The voices you trust on air throughout the storm.
So far in Clay County, there's a really good amount of flooding.
We are joined now by Ryan Bank of member station WJCT. He is in that city's emergency operations center.
With the information you need to keep you and your family safe.
Trying to give you as much information as we can, as quickly as we can look it up.
Jim is along I-95. Hi, Jim. How are things where you are?
Oh, pretty hellish.
The highest winds with Mayport Naval Air Station reporting in with an 87-mile-per-hour wind gust.
WJCT, your community, your world, your news.
Thank you all so much for all your hard work. Believe me, you guys are a lifeline to us.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, MTV's newest reality series, Siesta Key, features a glamorous group of young adults coming of age against the backdrop of the beautiful Southwest Florida resort town. Take a listen.
Welcome to Siesta Key, our secret paradise.
Just give me a
small, and our crew is tight. The kids here are wild. There's a lot of money and even more drama.
Is it not obvious that I don't want you hooking up with my friend?
Alex is sort of the king of our crew.
Cheers. All right, Siesta Key is being billed as the successor to prior MTV hits like The Hills or Laguna Beach. And how about this? A local filmmaker is the producer of this new hit show. Jacksonville filmmaker Warren Skeels is the creator of Siesta Key, and he's on the line. Hey, Warren.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. It's so good to talk to you. You know, I've known you for years, and I think you're such a talent. And it's so exciting that you've got this new national show. How did Siesta Key come about?
Well, I am good friends with Lawrence Najim of OCN Najim here in Jacksonville, who have, you know, they're a law firm, and they have been in the entertainment industry for several years now, repping John Travolta for a good period of time and also producing a couple large feature films. And we'd served together in the Mayor's Advisory Board of Film and Television under Todd Rubin's film office. And we had wanted to work together on a project at some point in time, kind of admiring each other's work from afar. And he came to me kind of out of the blue and said he had a colleague and a client down in Sarasota, Florida, who was very interested to find out whether or not his son and his friends had the makings of a reality show. So Lawrence and I took off and spent a weekend down in Sarasota and just, you know, really trying to figure out that group, that peer group, and kind of go on their adventures for the weekend and just kind of be a fly on the wall. And, you know, see what group dynamics, who, you know, really had a vibrant personality that could really carry a show. And, you know, I ended up walking away from that weekend, one, feeling very old.
yeah, I know. It's so funny. These are young kids. These are like right out of high school, right? These, the stars of Siesta Key.
They're 20 to 24.
Okay.
And, you know, they, you know, they're all natives of social media. So I felt like I was pretty good in my social media game. And then after spending a weekend with them, I realized I really knew nothing. but what I did walk away with was that there was absolutely the makings of a TV show there. And it was really just how we framed it and knew that we really had a good start in our hands because they really had some really interesting dynamics within the groups. They all had a long history with each other. And the personalities. I mean, it really all starts, you know, begins and ends with the personalities. And this particular group really had some fun ones. So
sure.
We knew we had something. From there, it was really a matter of kind of framing it as far as what the show, you know, how we really wanted to, what kind of show we wanted to make. Was it a reality show, like, you know, like a Housewives type show? Or, you know, was it more of a docu-series where, and we really follow these coming-of-age stories? And that was kind of the direction that I really wanted to take it. So we shot a pilot, and I brought it back to edit it with my old company, Tiger Lily Media in Jacksonville, with Billy Gagan. And we cut together that trailer and pilot, and that took several months. And then Lawrence and I went out to Los Angeles because we really wanted to find the right production partner to take kind of the next step to, you know, put it in front of, you know, the various networks that we thought would make, you know, the most sense for the show. And MTV was actually, in the early stages, you know, one of the very kind of front runners of where ideally we wanted to take the show and be in front of. But at the same time, you know, you're not going to go to all that trouble and just pitch one network. So we went out, we met with, gosh, probably 10 or 11 production partners, kind of the who's who of the reality world.
And MTV won the contest, it looks like.
We partnered with Tara Long at E1, who was a champion from the get-go about the project, and she put me in touch with the guys behind Creature Films, Mark Ford and Kevin Lopez, who are the executive producers on Laguna Beach. And, you know, those guys are brilliant. They're filmmakers, and they really got the
creativity. Sure, and almost out of time, Warren, but This really is a successor to these prior MTV hits like The Hills or Laguna Beach. Siesta Key is on every Monday night at 10 on MTV. And so, you know, are you going to become the next Mark Burnett? are you going to become the next reality impresario? What's next for you, really quickly?
Oh, that's hilarious. What's next is just making this the best show it can possibly be and, you know, continuing down this path and, you know, we'll let everything else take care of itself.
How many more episodes in the first season to air?
We've got two more episodes. We have two more episodes.
Okay, so people can catch two more new episodes of Siesta Key on MTV, Monday nights at 10. The creator of this new hit series is Jacksonville's own award-winning filmmaker, Warren Skeels. Warren, congratulations on the success, and I hope they renew it for a second season. Really exciting.
Thank you so much, Melissa. It is always a pleasure to chat with you. I can't wait to see your next film, because you are a very talented filmmaker.
Well, maybe I need some of your luck to rub off on me, don't I? All right, that's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chepchik. 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.